Hello, my name's Richard Sparks. I'm the author of New Rock, New Realm, a fantasy adventure story published by the science fiction and fantasy house Kazik, SF&F.
This is the first episode of a series with Richard Sparks, author of New Rock, New Realm.
Richard Sparks is an English-born TV comedy writer, lyricist, librettist, author, and director, now living in Los Angeles. His writing credentials span the gamut of the entertainment world, from film, TV, and books to lyrics for operas. He has experienced tremendous success in the entertainment business, having worked with such luminaries such as Jack Black, Rowan Atkinson, and John Cleese of Monty Python and Fawlty Towers fame. In the film The Secret of Nim 2, Eric Idle recorded a song of Richard's lyrics, music by Lee Holdridge. Eric was the bad mouse, tempting his little brother with our Nancy Reagan tribute song, Just Say Yes. A link will be in the show notes to that. Richard got his big break as a writer on the Not the 9 o'clock News, an irreverent take on current affairs that featured anchors broadcasting from the... I'm cracking up now. that featured anchors broadcasting from the bed and the unique talents of Rowan Atkinson, Griff Rhys Jones, Mel Smith, and Pamela Stevenson. One of Richard's biggest claims to fame is as the author of Atkinson's famous schoolmaster sketch, The Secret Policeman's Ball, in which the future Mr. Bean puts a hilarious spin on attendance taking and discipline. You stated that gaming has made your life more richer. Do you think this is a trend with older Americans, or is this just a flash in the pan, a few people catch on, not many do, sort of thing?
I think it's here to stay. The gaming industry is 9 times the size of Hollywood in terms of revenue, and that includes films and TV. The thing is, if you're watching a movie in the old-fashioned way, watching a play, you're just the audience, which is great. But if you're in a game and you're running your own avatar through, you know, forests and bogs and adventures or whatever you're doing, you're the hero of your own story. And you can create your avatar to represent you how you want to be in that game. They can be different from game to game. And the ones I like are the sword and sorcery games, the magic and mystery and mayhem and prop puzzles, challenges. And it just struck me one day, what would it really be like to be in a world like that? I was running around with a bunch of friends on a Friday night, getting up to mischief. And there was only one way to find out, and that was to write it. And that first book flew out in 2 months. It's 450 pages. It's like 180,000 words. And now it took a lot of rewriting, because there was quite a lot I didn't know about the forms of novel writing. You know, having been a script writer for 40 years, I've written a lot of prose, but there are some things that I needed to be educated on. And my editor is fantastic on that. One thing, Leslie Robin, who's well known in the science fiction fantasy community, she's the head of editorial at Kazik, the publisher. And right at the beginning, I said, it's so nice to be just me and the reader, just telling the story. And because in TV and films, which I've done a lot of writing for 4 decades, it's show business. I said, it's so nice we're doing tell business, telling a story. She said, no, you're completely wrong. I went, what? She said, and then she sort of picked a scene at random. She said, look, that scene where they go to them when they do something. Look, don't tell me, show me. And I thought, oh, I get it. She said, bring it to life. You're telling me what happened. Show it happening. Bring it. And so she helped me to bring everything to make it more immediate and more, that makes it much easier to read and much quicker to read because you're in the moment and you're going from place to place. You're not getting a lot of secondhand thoughts going into you, which always clog a story up. And this is particularly why I like speculative fiction, because, you know, if you get a decent writer, it zips along and it can go anywhere. It's a fascinating style of storytelling, really, story, you know, showing.
Do you consider yourself a stylist? Are you writing with a certain kind of voice and style, or are you a minimalist who, you know, just trying to paint the picture with only the words that are necessary to paint that picture in the scene?
No, like the Ed McBain style. He's a wonderful writer, but, you know, he very, very uses as few words as possible. I mean, he never says anything except he said or she said. He never goes whispered or muttered or shrieked. And that's his own style in those hard-boiled cop stories that he writes. But no, I think there's a whole canvas to be explored in stories, especially in speculative fiction, which is what fantasy and science fiction are. But there's so much out there in the imagination. And when, if you're writing about real life, of course, there's less and we know more about it. But out in the out there, you know, we are creating, we're building worlds for our audiences. And that's what I love when I'm reading a good story, well written. I mean, part of the problems with any genre story, science fiction, any other, romance, detective stories, there is, some of them can be poorly written. But if they're well written, the fantasy worlds and science fiction worlds can just whip you off, you know, and take your life over. And they're a wonderful experience when you get a good one.
Are you still gaming, or have you moved on to other things?
I come out the other end of it. It's bizarre because I was having this chat with Douglas Adams back in, it must have been the early 90s when he moved to LA, where I live, because he was doing Hitchhiker as a film. And that was about the fourth iteration of that idea. The first idea was the radio show, obviously, which was the original, which I listened to right at the beginning. In fact, you know, I knew about it before it was on the air. And then it was turned into a book. And that became a big seller. And so then he moved on to do a TV series in England, which wasn't very good. And then the film. But he was out in Hollywood, you know, interfering with it, as I told him. You know, just get out of their way. Let them do it. Anyway. He was great fun to chat with. But the point I was going to get to is that I said to him at one point, and sort of teasing him, because I knew that Douglas hated writing. I mean, our mutual friend John Lloyd, who was Douglas's writing partner at university and on Hitchhiker's Ride to the Galaxy, the radio series, before Douglas fired him and John went off and produced Not the 9 o'clock News, Spitting Image, Blackadder, QI, you know, it's our leading TV and radio producer of our generation. I said to Douglas, you know, if I'd written something as good as Hitchhiker, you wouldn't see me for dust. I'd keep churning them out. And he sort of stiffened and he said, well, it's not as easy as that. And I see what he means now, because I'm on the fifth book of my series.
Wow.
The first book took 2 months. Yeah. The second took 5 or 7, maybe. The third, a year. The fourth, a year and a quarter. I'm on book 5 at the moment. I'm not even halfway through it, and it's been a year and a half.
Holy smokes.
It's weird. It's just, well, first of all, you don't want to repeat what you've done before, but you don't want to go too far away from it. It's still, I mean, I've got a whole world to explore. I've got to be able to find plenty of things happening in that to our heroes. But sometimes, you know, ideas seem to be a little bit what you've done before, and that's not going to interest an audience. I don't know. Do you know John Scalzi's work?
I've read a few books. It's been a while.
Old Man's War.
Exactly. That's the one on my shelf right over there. Yeah.
Well, there's one book in that series in which he does the same. It's a wonderful series, well worth reading. But there's one book which he tells the same story from someone else's point of view, from the point of view of a girl, the daughter. Hmm. And I was reading it thinking, this is very odd. What's going to happen? And it doesn't break off and go somewhere else. It just, and I'm going, but I know what's going to happen in that case. And the closer he got to the end, I realized, there was sort of a feeling of frustration in that the plot was already in my head.
Yeah.
Very weird decisions. But, you know, when you're doing a series, you people want more of the series. You try and deliver more. But it's very odd how this one has slowed up on me. I think because, actually, to be honest, the series is complete in book four to a great extent. If I were to die now with this book unfinished, the four would stand as a tetralogy, it would be, wouldn't it, in Greek? That's fine. You know, like Lord of the Rings is a trilogy. Right, you don't need any more. I mean, he went on and wrote the Silmarillion, which was unreadable. I mean, but, you know, unless you're a Tolkien scholar and aficionado, it's a it's nothing. I mean, it's, you know, but the Lord of the Rings is perfect, you know, as it is.
Yeah.
So, in a way, I can think, well, at least I finished the series. But then what? I want to keep writing, and I think book six is going to be easier because I've got a whole reboot start type thing that's going to come in, and we'll be, you know, anyway, we'll see.
Okay. In the new book, the new Rock, New Realm book, Dax is up to something again. So tell us what's going on there.
Well, by the end of the first book, it's all explained why this has happened. I mean, if you remember the setup, he's a retired school teacher who turns out to be good at online role-playing games, and he and his two best mates, who'd never met in real life, one is Asian-American girl. She's the dual-wielding, she's what we call DPS in games, damage per second, and she's great warrior. You know, hits like a... moves like a hurricane and hits like a truck kind of thing. And the other one is the tank. He's Grell. He's an orc. He's Australian. So he's a big, lumbering brute. Great guy. Lovely character. I love writing him. I love writing them both. And the three of them win the world championship of online sword and sorcery. And what? You know, the next thing they know, though, instead of that being the end of the tournament, it's the beginning of the book. The next thing our hero knows is he's standing on a hillside with a crappy sword and shield going, what the hell happened? Now, he hasn't gone into a game like it's been done by some other, well, like Tron. It's for real. It's out there, but he's now living in that kind. And it's all put together at the end. So at the end of the first book, you're now off to the races with the sequels, of which I've written three sequels. New Rock, New Realm and New Rock, New Rules comes up in November 2025. Then New Rock, New Roads in 26. And by then, with luck, I'll have finished number five. I need to get behind behind it. People, I mean, my poor old George Martin, who's, you know, absolutely brilliant, brilliant writer. But, I mean, people have been waiting for his latest book for more than a decade. And must be, well, the amount of pressure on him must be extraordinary. I can't imagine it.
Guess what? We have more, folks. More value for you in the show notes. The show notes show up right in your podcast player if that's what you are using to listen to this podcast. However, if you downloaded this as an MP3 from a webpage, go back to the webpage where you downloaded it, and there you will see the show notes. Next episode, more Richard Sparks.
I could work a little on my self-improvement on this trek, Grell thought. My geniality, my lovability, my sweetness and light. Meanwhile, just keep going forwards. Forwards, through these leafless trees, on these little slippery paths, past these damp banks of dead ferns and brown bracken, and the occasional pond or stream, and up slopes and down slopes and on and on and on. And now there's this little fuck standing in my way. It was the first living soul Grell had seen in days. Here's me, just trudging along, minding my own business, head down against the rain, and I look up and see him, standing there up ahead, in the middle of this muddy path, arms crossed, eyeing me thoughtfully, waiting for me to stop and talk to him. Grell unslung Fug and held her at the ready. Get the message, shrimp? The shrimp's eyebrows rose. An odd little fellow, he looked to Grell, more like Horm and Narek than Olla, kind of like one, kind of like the other. Nothing resembling a big nasty orc. In a category of his own, then. Long, mud-coloured hair flowed out from under his pointed cap, tied up at the back with a strip of leather. He had to be 40 at the very least, Grell thought. 50 more like, on a closer look.
He was in travel-stained clothes, jerkin, leggings, some kind of half-sleeved, raggedy coat over the top of it all. Everything he wore was brown and dark green and splattered with mud. He was leaning on a stained old hand axe. It looked more like a woodman's tool than a proper weapon. He had a knife in his belt, a sword at his hip, and a small round board on his back, beneath a full, sealed quiver, and what looked to Grell like a hunting bow, unstrung because of the rain. He was small, far smaller than Grell. Also more relaxed than Grell was. He didn't seem to have gotten the message that Fug in Grell's hands was meant to be sending him. Stand aside or you get some of this. His eyes went from Fug to Grell's face and back again. The little whatever he was said, nodding. Pretty, that. Pretty, Grell grunted. Yeah, and pretty fucking sharp. It's Niblin steel, this is, so back off, you little twat, before I cut you in half with it. Oh, the reply came. Someone's in a bad mood.